My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Peter.
Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And grateful to be here and share with you my experience with this work. And tonight we're supposed to cover 6 and 7. And I have no idea where we're going to go with this and where we'll end up, but we'll see. June 23rd, 1980 was my separation from alcohol. And without any plans of landing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Over the weekend, we were just talking about this with a few friends over lunch about the day of separation. And almost all of us agreed it came down to not thinking about treatment or Alcoholics Anonymous. It really came down to I can't live like this anymore. Mine was I don't want to die. I need help. No one was thinking about it. I'm going to go to AA, get a sponsor, and do 90 and 90 and go through the steps and be a guru in a week. It was just, it's over. And in that a gift of desperation, incredible things happen when we're split open like that. And we are split open, spiritually split wide open. And one of the things that I had thrown out, and I'll kick out with you, is something that fits all of this. And it really kind of slides right into 6 and 7, where we're looking at the death of self again. And that is this: the truth is true until we find out it no longer isn't. And we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, even with belief systems about what AA is supposed to be like, what it's supposed to, what the membership is supposed to look like, what a sponsor is supposed to be about, God, all of it. And none of it's correct, because it's based on belief systems that we have acquired in our exposure to certain things when we're sound asleep and never wide awake. If you think about it, when you first came into AA and your first reaction to AA and where we are, say, 5 years later, it's a different AA. Even our relationships are a big book in God. So the truth is true until we find out it no longer isn't. But how we find out it no longer isn't, someone has to present the truth to us. When the truth is presented to me, it doesn't always taste good. And I love the analogy of Christopher Columbus, who in his day they thought the world was flat. And they made decisions based on a flat world. And it really limited progress, if you think about it. Only go out so far and come back. And that's how they operated. And he, being probably an alcoholic, said, I'm going to go there anyway. You know, he didn't tell us not to go. I'm going anyway. You're going to get arrested. Don't worry, not me. And I go in. And the interesting thing was when he came back, he says, where you been? He says, I don't know, but I'm going again, you know. And he goes out and finds out, obviously, that the world is round. And what happened, everything blew wide open on that. And these ghosts that were out there and these dragons that were waiting for you never existed. And what the mind creates is ghosts and dragons and things that are going to happen to us that are non-existent. And I have to approach my AA, my recovery, with the truth is true until I find out no longer is. I need a sponsor to show me where the truth really is. And the truth is never, ever in the mind. And when we finish five, we've looked at a lot of self in five, and the things that don't work and that we were so locked into, so much so we weren't even aware that they were operating in our life, and we're living on the lines of human consciousness rather than God consciousness, which all is generated by a thinking mind. The mind owns me, will continue to own me unless I'm with God, and I need to be all in with God, because I'm just a little bit in with God, then I don't have a God experience, which means my mind's running the show, and all the self starts to awake and run and manifest in all my life. Selfishness, self-centeredness, self-absorbed, ego, pride, the 7 deadly sins, and they have to die. There's something I want to read to you, a book I studied for the longest time called God Calling, and it says, and this, it was God speaking to them, self-dethroned, that is the lesson, but in its place put love for me, knowledge of me being God. Self, not only dethroned, but dead. A dead self is not an imprisoned self. An imprisoned self is more potent to harm. In all training, in mind of you and you of others, let self die. But for each blow to the life of self, you must at the same time embrace and hold fast the new life, life with me being God. It is not a dead self that men have to fear, but a thwarted, captive, imprisoned self. That self is infinitely more self-centered than the self allowed full play. But to you, my children, he says, I teach a higher science law than even freedom of the self. I teach death to the self. No repressions, just death. Petty self like life exchange for divine life. He even goes on to say, they go on to say, that as long as self is breathing manifestations up, as long as the mind is operating, I don't even have the ability to forgive because my self is still in the way, the ego is in the way, and I will debate if I'm going to forgive you or not. And he goes on to say that the reason why I'm in the business of forgiving you is because I was hurt. Who got hurt? Not the spirit, not God, but me and my ego and my self-centeredness. You did something to me that hurt me. Oh my God, now I'll think about forgiving you. But we can't hurt God. We go to God for forgiveness. When we're right with spirit, how could you hurt me? You don't have that kind of power. It's a quick, it's almost an instant forgiveness. Forgive them for they know not what they do, huh? But as long as self and ego and pride is breathing, I'm subject to you hurting me. You're going to disappoint me. You're not going to do what I want, and I get hurt, and I get resentful, and I go sulk, and I argue. We don't talk for 3 days. I scorn you. It goes on and on and on, all the things we do, because self has been hurt. And what a great way to take a look at who's running my life. If I'm sound asleep, I'm subject to everything. Here's some defects. Anger. Open rebellion against God to our fellows and creatures. Its purpose, anger is, and desire is to eliminate any obstacle to my self-seeking. Right? Here's another one. Initiation, collection, or retailing of gossip. Arousing, fostering, and organizing antagonism against others. Unnecessary criticism of others, even if it's true. Failure to thank God or express our gratitude adequately. Use of holy things for personal advantage. Got to leave work because it's my holiday. I'm not doing anything. I just want to leave work. Right? Refusal to recognize God's wisdom, providence, and love. Expectations that others will dislike, reject, or mistreat us. Overreadiness so to interpret their attitude and quickness to take offense. Right? This is all ego. Unfounded suspicions. You know what I heard what they're doing? I think they're doing this. And then we all get together and we character assassinate someone. They don't live in the state anymore. Right? Rejection of God's known will in favor of my own interest or pleasure. Insisting, I love this one, that others conform to my wishes, recognize my leadership, accept my own estimate of worth. And there's another one how... where I forget how it goes, but I excuse me for certain faults, but I will never forgive you for the same faults. Right? How could you do this? And I forget how many times I did the same thing. Right? These are the things that operate. And until growth won't occur until we step into a place we don't know. Growth doesn't occur until we step into the unknown. And that's what we're about to do when we look at 6 and 7, because we're about to cut loose everything we think we are. Even things that we know aren't good for us, we're asking to have God take every one of them, and we're kind of feeling like we're working without a net. But what's the alternative? To continue as we are. And the question is this: how's that working for you? So I come out of step 5, and through step 5, what I do with men when I hear step 5, or when my sponsor hears my 5th step, is we take notes. We take notes of the defects of character that kept popping up, the common ones over and over and over again. Self-centeredness, fear, pride, ego, right? Anger, lust, whatever it might be. They keep popping up page after page after page. And when we get done with step 5, we have a list of defects of character. 5 of them, 10 of them, 20 of them, whatever they may be. Every one of them we get to see is fueled by fear. Fear is at the core of every single defect of character. Fear, the evil and corroding thread. It says the fabric of our existence was shot through it. We remove fear from the equation. I'm talking about emotional fear, not fear, oh my God, the building's burning, let's go. And it's not even the fire that we're afraid of anyway. It's what the fire can do to us, right? Because we can sit around a campfire and have a good time, but the building's burning, I might die, right? So we look at the defects of character. Fear is the catalyst at the core of every one of them. And what we do is we list the defects on a sheet of paper. And then we list the opposite of every defect. Distrust, trust. Anger, love. Intolerance, tolerance, etc. And what I do is I show up to step 6, and there's some considerations in step 6. If I'm not willing to have every defect of character removed, willing to have every defect of character removed, not knowing where I'm going to land when they are removed in God's time, and I'm still balking, my book says, okay, let's pray for willingness. And I'm still not willing, either A, have to do more inventory, or B, go back and touch step one, because it's usually a first step problem. Because when I show up to this work, I'm ready to be reborn, recreated, made new from the inside out. And if I'm balking at any of that stuff, it really comes down to I have a first step problem, a reservation, a lurking notion that I can run my life. And we will find around step 10, there's a difference between managing my own life and proper use of the will. As long as I'm thinking about how to do my life, I'm managing my life. In fact, as long as I'm thinking, I'm in trouble. It's the biggest addiction that's on the planet is thinking. Even during this meeting right now, and I'm not calling anyone out, but it's just the way it is. As I'm speaking, I'd say two-thirds of this room is thinking about 20 other things too. One ear on me and the other ear on the mind, and the mind is speaking. And so the mind and the ear should go deaf to that, to each other. Right? But that's what we do. We think. We think, boy, do we think. And as long as I'm thinking, the ego is breathing. And the mind and the ego pretends it's going to protect me, but really what it's doing is protecting itself. And this work is about to put the ego and the mind out of work. It's going to give the ego and the mind a pink slip. It's going to be unemployed, and it will fight for its life. And the closer we get to the archway, the closer we get to the world of the spirit, it's going to scream a little bit more. And temptation to do things are going to be there. Temptation to say things or not say something when I ought to are going to be there, all about eroding any kind of spiritual progress. We can look at our illness, really, as this. Think of it as an entity. It's all in the mind. That's why they call it an illness, or some people call it disease. I'm just as sick as the person on major psych meds because I drink and die. I mean, that's psychotic. I commit suicide slowly, and I return back to the instrument that's starting the whole ball rolling, the mind again. But if you put me in an MRI machine, you couldn't see my thinking on my mind. If you gave me an X-ray, you couldn't see my thinking on my mind. So we think of it as like this entity that's kind of floating around. It's up here. We're broken. I'm broken. And it'll show up at any time. There's an author that refers to part of this as something called a pain body. It goes dormant. It just kind of lays back here. And you think you're good to go and I'm in charge of my life. And all it takes is one little spark to ignite it. And in 5 minutes, I didn't even recognize you because you're in a rage. You're in depression. You're isolating. You're acting. I'm saying, this doesn't make no sense. He was just as still as can be an hour ago. It wakes up and it takes over. And there's a yearning in a lot of us just to go out and break out because this life is too disciplined. I'm not done. Because even if I have that feeling, I need to do something completely against what I think God's will is. If I'm done, I'm going to run and say, hey, James, I got to talk to you. I got some stuff going on. I don't know where it's coming from. That's an attempt to get well. It's when we keep the secrets in. We keep them close to the vest. I'll present the great AA guru character, but as soon as I get out there, all bets are off. That's the illness working. And if I don't tell anyone about it, what I'm really searching for in my acting out, in my keeping secrets, in my rage, in my depression, what I'm looking for at the end of the rainbow is a drink. I'm going down lots of different avenues, but what I really want is a drink. But my ego is so smart, it's not going to tell me, you want a drink, because it knows I'll back up. It's going to endorse very unspiritual behavior, make it spiritual, say, we need a little relief. It's okay. It's you. You can get away with just a little bit. It's no big deal. I'll get back on a horse and ride tomorrow. But what it's doing, it's taking me and taking me and taking me. And what it really wants, what I want, is another drink. That's how folks who are in here a while go out and drink again. And folks say, what? Didn't they have like 10 years? Because they presented to you the stage character, which we're all great at. I mean, we learned out why we were drinking, right? Come home after 3 day drunk and she's waiting there and we show up with roses and we come up with an excuse that we really think she's going to buy, right? We clean up before we go to work and look really good. We know how to do the stage character. We're the best actors in the world. We do that in here. We'll present for the AA community on how I got it together. But I'm busted up. I'm ripped apart on the inside. The mind makes a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. And in most cases, it's the master, even though I don't think it is. It's so smart, it tells me, hey, no, I'm in charge. You're doing good. You're a spiritual giant. Look at you. Anytime I think I'm really spiritual, I've probably gone sideways. Anytime I think I'm like godlike, I've gone sideways. Anytime I think they need me to sponsor them, I should just shut up and go have a cup of coffee. Right? Because who's telling me that? The mind. The spirit is a little different. And anyone who's had this knows what I'm talking about. I call it a rhythm. There's a rhythm. There's a beat to it. It's just a movement in life. You're just pushed a little bit. And it comes from a very deep place, and there's no thought involved with this. There's no defect showing up at that moment. They will show up from time to time. That's why they give us step 10. That's why they give us step 11. That's why we have to be accountable to someone. Because I may not act out, but I got some weird thinking going on. Here's the question. What sort of thinking do I have going on that I'm not willing to tell anyone about? And if we identify that, yeah, I do have some stuff going on that I'm afraid to tell anyone about because they may think less of me. Nothing wrong with that. But go tell someone about it. Because when I don't, now the ego's got his arms around me again. The ego's seductive. It's like it shows up as the best friend, that lover you've been waiting for. It'll show up like a lady, perfect, like a gentleman, perfect, roses, candy, and candlelight dinner. And you'll say, wow, the person I've been waiting for. And as soon as you sit down for dinner, bang, it all comes out. You ever date someone, they think the man or woman your dreams 3 months later, you say, I got to get them out of my life. I can't take it anymore. What was I thinking, right? That's how the ego is very seductive. It'll just come, it's like, I'm with you. Me and you, we're going to take on the world. Right? That's what it does. It does the thinking for us. And how it shows up is in self, manifestations of self, the behavior we're doing. The thinking starts and the behavior follows. And then I justify my inappropriate behavior and make it appropriate. I make excuses for it. Or just one time, it's no big deal. I was speaking to a friend over the weekend, sober many years, and he found himself in kind of an awkward position over and over and over and over, and then started lying about it and covering it and then denying it and trying to shake it off and giving little pieces of a story to you and little pieces to you and little piece to you, trying to shake himself loose of it, and then he had to come clean with it. And to go through the work again and see where this new addiction came from. Just showed up. Because the illness will go underground and resurface in other areas. And folks look at step 6 and 7 and say, well, 2 paragraphs, how important could it be? Remove 6 and 7 from the 12 steps and see how empty the program looks. How empty the 12 steps look. Because how could I move into 9 and go out and make restitution, go out and make amends, and do God's work in the healing when I'm still loaded with me? Because the reason why now I'm coming to you is so I look good. Without 6 and 7, pride and ego was showing up because I'm looking for a benefit. There's a benefit, there's a payoff to it. So we have some questions on the bottom of 75 that we shared last week to make sure everything is in place. All the stones are in place. As far as I can tell, sponsor, I gave you everything. There's no hidden secrets, nothing about the sex life, no fears I'm hiding. As far as I can tell, I gave you everything. And the sponsor will say this, on the way home or tonight or tomorrow, if you think of something, call me and we'll disclose it to me. If there's something that you did hide, talk to me about it. And what I tell folks very often is after we're done with the 5th step, and sometimes I forget to do this, but I'm pretty consistent, is this. We finish a 5th step, and they're going to get 6 and 7 instructions. They leave my house, or I leave their house, and maybe they disclose some things that are very close to them, shameful things. And what I let them know is I call it the boomerang effect. They threw it out, and it's going to circle back, and you feel like you're going to get cut to ribbons. And it goes like this. Why did I tell them that? I should have never done that. He knows it. He'll always look at me different. She will always look at me different. I tell him, be aware of that, because all that is the ego saying, hey, what did you just do? It's running wild. Got to pull you off of this. So I don't call the sponsor and I don't continue. If you ever experience that, understand it's the illness. Our illness If we're awake, spiritually awake, even waking up, it is the worst poker player in the whole world. It will show you its hand every time if we're spiritually awake, because we can recognize that awareness, the greatest agent of change. If I become a little bit aware, I can peek over the fence and see what the lay of the land looks like. Oh, here comes the illness. It's talking to me right now. I can tell it, have a nice day, thanks for sharing, and keep moving. Right? But if I'm sound asleep, I'm playing against the house all the time, and I lose. It will beat me every time. It will trick me every time. I step here, and it pops up there. I step here, and it pops up there. That's when I'm sound asleep. When we're awake, that's not going to happen. When we're awake, we'll have a sponsor. When we're awake, we're walking with God. The chances of that happening are slim and none. I become awake. And if I do find myself in the grip of something that's uncomfortable, I'm quick to seek out a sponsor. I'm quick to discuss it with one of my peers, my support group. I'm writing inventory and I'm praying about it. This is freedom, guys. So if we're here tonight and we're experiencing bondage, why? Why am I going to Alcoholics Anonymous and still in bondage? I'm waiting for that thing to happen, waiting for the miracle to happen. The miracles happen. You're sitting in a meeting of AA. The miracles happen. What are we going to do with it? I'll double up on meetings. I'll go to more big group meetings. I'll go hear this one. I'll go to that one. I'll listen to more tapes. All good. But why are we still sitting in bondage when we belong to the greatest spiritual movement to hit the planet? Alcoholics Anonymous, believe it or not. They call it the greatest spiritual movement. There's over 200, maybe even 300 now, fellowships that have come out of Alcoholics Anonymous because it works. Now the mind says, how could 12 steps fix this? It works. Right? Okay. It says on step 6, if we can answer to our satisfaction the questions on page 75. Right? The bottom of page 75. I'll read them real quick. Have we omitted anything from the fifth step? For we're building an archway through which we shall walk a free man or woman at last. Keywords, at last. I tried everything possible to get some freedom. Always in bondage. This tells me, at last I'm going to be free. So why am I in AA and still in bondage when I have this to get free at last? And if we're experiencing freedom tonight, why not get freer? Right? If I was drunk, I like getting drunker. If I was high, I like getting higher. Right? I didn't say, oh, I'm high. I'm going home now. I got it. Right? I'm good. Right? What do? Sell the jewelry. Get more. Right? Remember at 3 o'clock, who could we borrow money off? I got to get higher. Right? All the dope fiends in the back identified with that piece, right? Right? You're drunk, you get drunker. So if you're freed, you want to get freer. Right? I like the effect produced by God. It says, is our work in the fifth step solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? He's repeating the same thing over different language. Bill's always trying to create a picture of this archway we're building. All the cement right, the mix right, the stones right. Have we skipped on the cement put into the foundation? You know, if any construction guys here, Mark could tell you, if the foundation's weak, it's going to collapse, whatever you're building. It's going to fall, right? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? I've been good. Everything's good. Everything's in place. Let's go to step 6. Key stuff here. He says, if you can answer to our if you can answer these questions to your satisfaction, we look at step 6. Shift. If we can answer, me sitting down, looking at these questions, and I can answer them to my satisfaction, not the sponsors now. It's between me and God, because they know by now I've had some sort of shift in consciousness. I've been made awake. I've been made pure even for a brief moment, and I can answer these questions to my own satisfaction. I keep moving. It says we emphasize willingness as being indispensable, absolutely required. Willingness. Am I still willing? Am I ready to let God remove from me all the things I have admitted are objectionable? Okay, I'm ready to cut all of them loose. Can God take them all, every one? He better. I've said this from a million of these podiums. If I don't go to God and have God deal with my defects, the defects will deal with me. A lot of us are trying to get in touch with ourselves. I got to find myself. Trust me, when you find yourself, you might say, this was a bad move. I'm not too thrilled with the product, right? And when you do find yourself, okay, now what? Right, you sit in a therapist's office for 10 years. I'm discovering myself. How's that working for you? Instead of discovering self and all its manifestations, how about let's discover God? See, when I'm right with God and I'm in the sunlight of spirit, defects of character start to die. Ego gets grinded into dust. I don't have to worry about forgiving you because you're not pissing me off all the time. I'm kind of free. It all starts with God. Once I get right with God, I can wear the world like a loose garment. A lot of stuff just falls. What you think of me goes away. What I think of me goes away. What I drive goes away. How much money I make, as long as I'm supporting my family, goes away. I'm not trying to compete with the neighbors. Right? If I'm a spoke in a wheel, it's okay. If I'm the bicycle itself, it's okay. Who cares? And folks lose power over me that they always had. Because if you're an alcoholic and you're in and out of AA, and when you first start drinking, we know we were always trying to fit in and gain acceptance, gain approval. And to do that, we would hang out with anyone, sleep with anyone, do anything, become a criminal, become a liar, just to be with a pack that someone says, I like you. That's a huge attachment to external conditions, external to people, to things. That's bondage. And to deal with that, I need a drink. I just need a drink. Now I need a drink to deal with what I did yesterday. I realized Sunday's idea, Monday was a really bad problem, really bad idea, and I need a drink just to deal with that. It's called the emotional hangover. I wake up Monday morning, I don't know who's sleeping next to me and where I've been. At the time, it seemed like a good idea, but on Monday morning, going, really bad idea, give me a drink. Right? That's what the mind does for us. And it isn't until we get to the 11th step that it talks about that our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Do my insides match what I'm doing out there? And does out there look like what's going on in here? I could be having God thoughts all day and rip you off. Right? I could be having really bad thoughts all day, really bad ones, evil ones, and present a stage character that you like. Both are a contradiction to the spiritual path. And so I need to speak to someone about what's going on with me. I need to get into my steps. I need out of the big book, and I need to have a sponsor who's going to guide me through this, and I better be praying like my life depends upon it because my life depends upon it. And at the beginning, I would do this because I was told to do it. You better do this or else, and I did it. And then I got to a place where I get to. I'm above ground sucking air, and I'm sober. Everything's a get to. I'm exhausted. I did one of these over the weekend, got home around, I don't know, 1:30 this morning, got to bed, I don't know what time it was, got up and went to work. It's raining out. I'm tired. I haven't had dinner yet. I had a really light lunch. I'm there's no gas in the tank tonight. But I get to come here and be of service. And this isn't a chore. This is a get to. Right? If I didn't have to speak, then I'd probably be, you know, hunkered down in bed tonight sleeping. But there's an invitation, and I get to honor that. We get to go through the book. We get to. Everything's a get to. And if I don't experience a get to in life, I just got more spiritual work to do. That's all it is. Wednesday night, sometimes I call my sponsor every Wednesday night, and sometimes I'm tired. I don't feel like taking direction. I don't feel like reading my inventory about what a loser I am today on the thing, you know? But I call because it's a get to, because I know the alternative. And every time I'm done with the hour phone call, I feel revitalized and reborn and connected again. And sometimes I'm excited to call my sponsor. I can't wait to get on the phone with my sponsor. We're going to kick some stuff around, and I'm going to be a student for an hour. Always keep the mind of a student, by the way. Always mind of a student, even though you're teaching. And it's invigorating. It's great. Right? We'll kick around the big book. We'll kick around scripture. We'll kick around things about life and recovery. What a good deal. Because the alternative is hustling the streets tonight looking for money to get fired up. Right? That's the alternative. And that's waiting for every one of us. It's waiting for me. I know what the streets are like. Okay. So I have this list of defects of character. And on my knees, I surrender to God. Father, I'm willing that these be released. I'm not telling God to take these. because it's not my job to do. I'm not petitioning God. But this is what was revealed to me. All these defects of character. I stand ready. You take all of them. And I thank you for the opposites if you think I need these. And it's a simple offering. This is what looks like it's in the way. This is what was revealed to me. And I thank you for the opposite. I thank you for the honesty. I thank you for compassion. I thank you for tolerance, etc. And then God's going to do what God's going to do, because some assets taken to the extreme become liabilities. And some of these defects, what appear to be defects, just need to be tweaked. Some of them need to be completely removed. But that's God's deal, because only God knows what to do with me. And like a great sculpture, he doesn't add clay on. He removes clay to create what he wants, his vision. A vision for you, a vision for me, God's vision for us. It's by the process of removal that we wake up. Never addition. Recovery is not about addition. Recovery is not about adding. Recovered is not about adding, not about getting stuff. Everything we need to walk this journey has been given to us by a loving God. Everything we need. What has happened is stuff has gotten in the way. The road has gotten messed up. The path that's already been laid out for every one of us is present. It's been leveled by us. Stuff, trees has been put on, leaves and garbage and all kinds of stuff that we can't see the yellow brick road. And what the work does is clean it off, and things will be thrown out. And some things are salvageable, they just need to be fixed up. But let us go to the touch of the Master's hand to do that, not mine. In fact, when I hand the defect list to my men, I say, this is what was revealed with my notes. I tell them, you can throw the whole thing out. You can add to it. You can take some stuff off. This is a list of defects. You sit with God and see what fits, because the shift is with them and God, not me. Dependence upon God, never a sponsor, never a home group. That's dangerous. We take direction. We listen like students to our teachers, our elders. And I'm not a big fan of sponsor and sponsee. It sounds too therapeutic and too new age. I like teacher and student. It creates a different picture for me. Almost like an Eastern philosophy. I sit with my teacher and he instructs and I go. But my higher power is still God. And for many of us at the beginning, our sponsor is almost a higher power. When we're first starting out, that's okay. Because they're in this place. That seems like a place we can't achieve yet, and we'll listen. But we should wake up enough to respect our sponsor, maybe walk shoulder to shoulder with him and take direction, but the dependence and the worship is to a God of our understanding. If the sponsor's done their job, they've steered you there and steered you away from them. Right? So I have this, and I sit, and I do the seven-step prayer. Watch what the seven-step prayer says. It says, my Creator, my God, I am now, right now, willing that you should have all of me, not the parts that I want to give to you. There's another surrender. The seven-step prayer, excuse me, is an extension of our third-step prayer. We return our will and life over the care of God. Now what we have left are these defects of character. Steps 6 and 7 become our first step for life, which I'll explain in a minute. And again, it's another surrendering to God with our life. When we do 4 and 5, 4 is the writing part of the house cleaning, 5 is the discussion part of the house cleaning. Looking to have this new relationship with this power called God, which allowed me to have new relationships with others, even though I know you for 20 years. We will have a new relationship now, a healthier one, because I'm awake. And I come to 6 and 7, and a lot of stuff has fell through the sifter. When I was a kid, my mom used to take me to the beach and sandbox, and I used to have these buckets and things and throw the sand and shake it. Everything would fall through, and a couple of shells or rocks would stay on the top, and mom would say, oh, that's a gift from God, we'll take it home, and I'd lose rocks, right? Because they didn't fall through the screen. So we do 4 and 5, everything falls through. What we got left is a couple of little nuggets on top, the defects of character that didn't go through the process yet. Selfishness, self-centered, ego, pride, whatever it might be. Lust, greed, usually some variation of the 7 deadly sins. They're stuck. Some of them we don't even want to give up. We have to be willing. Our book talked about that. But this is what's left. And these are the things, whether it's one of them, all fear, by the way, one of them or a bunch of them have to go. And these are the things left over that will take me back to a drink. These are the things that are driving me very, very under the surface. Well, you can't see them. I don't even know they're there until I do this work, and it becomes my first step life. My current unmanageability is about what's left right here. My future unmanageability, my future agnosticism, my drink that's waiting for me is all coming right from these defects of character. They need to go. So we may start off with a whole truckload of defects of character at the first step. By the time we get to 6 and 7, maybe we say there's a half a dozen on that didn't fall through. But that's my first step for life, and they need to go. Not work on them, not deal with them, not embrace them. I heard this in some treatment centers and therapists. Embrace your defects of character. Really? How's that work out for you? I'm going to embrace my fear and my self-centeredness. Have you got enough of this going on? Right? Uncover, discover, and discard is what Chuck C. said. Uncover, discover, and throw it out like bad garbage. But God's going to do it. Now, I can't work on my defects of character, because who's working on them? Mind. I can't deal with my defects of character, because they will deal with me. They need to go. And the only one who's going to do that is God and His time. Some of the things, like I said, I thought were really bad just need to be tweaked. And it says, my Creator now willing to have all of me good and bad. So this thing I thought was really bad might be good for me, just needs to be tweaked. And this thing I thought was really good for me might be really bad. I don't know. But this is up to God to decide good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. So this seven-step prayer is not about me. It's about cleaning me up to be of service to you and God. Because we're supposed to be agents for God, effective agents for God. And I can't be an effective agent for God if I'm consumed with me. I'm not effective. I'm infecting people. And suddenly, when I get cleaned up like this, and I'm an effective agent for God, I'm not thinking about drinking. I'm not thinking about taking other substances. I'm not thinking about acting out. I'm whole. And if I do drift, we have step 10 and 11. We have a sponsor to push us back. But the level of awareness has been brought to a level where I can spot it. Something's wrong. I'm not right. What am I missing? Call up the sponsor. Today was just, you know, off the beam feeling, what's going on with me? Grant me strength, it says, as I go out from here to do your bidding. Steps 8 and 9. And then live in 10, 11, and go work with others in 12. And then we generate a tremendous amount of power here as we go into 10 and 11. And that power will keep us in a wonderful place and will be enough power to take us back through 129 again and kill more self off and kill more ego off. And that's why we get freer. Self dies over and over. Daily dying for successful living. There's an amen at the end of the seven-step prayer. There isn't one at the end of 3 because it's one movement. It's a whole fact-finding deal here. We're going decision in 3, we go in. Uncover and discover in 4. Talk about it in 5. 6 and 7, we're left with what's left here. And we surrender it to God. And I surrender these defects. Thank God for the opposites. Know it's His time, His hand, His way. And what I think is bad for me just needs to be tweaked to make it good and vice versa. And I close it up with the 7-step prayer. There was a gentleman in Staten Island. He told this story. He was a barker, almost appeared pompous and arrogant, black and white about the book, and would just confront his guys, just cold, right down the middle. But he had like 20 guys he was sponsoring. And he was a tremendous sponsor. And when he would speak at a meeting, he'd say, well, that made sense. It was raw, it was cold, but it made sense. He didn't care about feelings and things like that. And he says, for years I've been praying to God with this work in 6 and 7. Make me more tender. Make me more delicate. But it's never been removed. And his sponsor sat him down. How many men do you attract? He says, a lot. I'm sponsoring this many now. He says, God's not going to remove that. You want that to remove, to stroke the ego, to have everyone say, you're such a wonderful person. He annoys a lot of people, but he's being of service to many. And he attracted the personality that needs a bulldog. Conversely, maybe we get someone who's a bit meek and timid and wants to be that barker. And God's saying, no, because you attract that type of person. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. So a couple of stories, because there are a lot of mechanics here, too, with 6 and 7. We have fifth-step promises in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're supposed to come to us after 5, but sometimes they'll come in 6 and 7 or 8 and 9, but they will materialize. And I looked at the fifth-step promises, and the only thing I felt when I was done initially was I felt part of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that thing was done. I finished it. And I was going to a meeting in Brooklyn called the Bath Beach Group, a Friday night meeting, and they met at like 7 and then 8:30, two meetings. And it was in the school building, and I'm walking up the steps. And as I'm walking up the steps to the second floor where the classroom meeting was held in a classroom, something happened. And I felt as if I was high, I'll be honest with you. I felt light, I felt free, I loved everybody, I was euphoric. And I couldn't understand what was going on. And I felt as if everything around me kind of slowed up a bit. Everything was kind of in slow motion, almost three-dimensional. It was incredible. My eyes felt like they were open this big. And I called my sponsor about this, and he knew exactly what was going on, like most sponsors do. I was able to look the world in the eye, felt the nearness of my creator, felt like the drink problem disappeared, it was coming strong, I felt connected, I felt right, it was this fifth step promises happening in 6 and 7, because I was doing 6 and 7 instructions, ready to go into 8 and 9. Right? There was a time in 6 and 7 when I had what I really, at the time, considered the worst experience I could have, because what I know now is experiencing the death of self, not the physical death, but the death of self. And I had gone through the work. It was a bunch of times I'd gone through the work. And I was sitting in my home on a Sunday, and I got my 6 and 7 instructions, and I was moved to go into prayer meditation. What came to me was, Father, save me from me, because I realized at that moment my level of awareness gave me information that I will kill me faster than anyone. I am my own worst enemy. I went to meditation, and I felt like I was vibrating. I felt sick. I felt I was polluted and poisoned. I felt sick. Like I never went to AA in my life. I don't know what was going on. I felt like it was crumbling, imploding. I don't like the feeling. And to describe it, as I've always said, I felt like I never went to an AA meeting in my life. Like I just got in here one day back. And I call my sponsor and I share with him my drama. And he says, it sounds like you're having an experience. And then hung up the phone. This was this enlightened guru sponsor I had. Because he was doing exactly what Dr. Silkworth did to Bill Wilson. When he walked in on Bill Wilson, and Bill obviously looked different and shared his experience of the white light, Dr. Silkworth didn't say, now just take it easy, I'll give you a prescription, fill this out and get some medication and some Ambien, I'll fix you and you'll be back and running again, right? He didn't do that. He says, it's better than what you got, hold on to it, and he left. Can't get in the way of God's work. And if we're having an experience, never talk it away. And Mark knew if he started talking to me, I'd start figuring it out and would quickly go. Sound like you're having an experience, left me alone, hung up the phone. And that's exactly what was going on. Because later that night and the next day, I realized that God was taking a sledgehammer to self and it did not feel good. But the outcome of that was more freedom than I have ever experienced. It was enlightening. It was earth-shattering. What we need to remember, guys, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, it tells us that. Spiritual waking, spiritual experience, educational variety of the white light experience. But when God shows up, God shows up. And it's profound, it's life-changing, it's mood-altering, it's immediate, it's there. And you could be driving your car, tending to your children, watering your lawn, praying and meditating, and suddenly you have the God experience. And it may have taken you a couple of weeks or a couple of months, but when it shows up, it feels like it just showed up. And you're never the same. Huh? Okay. So I close up with this seven-step prayer. And I do this every time. List the defects, surrender them, thank God for the opposite, understanding it's none of my business what's going on. It's up to God to change me in His time. There's greater pain in not changing than the change itself. We don't like change. The amount of that we can understand as far as change goes is about 5%. I remember reading one of these leading psychologists wrote this, that we as a people can only fathom about changing our life 5%. Meaning I'm going to move from Boca to Deerfield. Right? And you know how it is when some of us have a huge upheaval moving East Coast to West Coast, getting in a new marriage or out of a marriage, what that does. It's all over. We have to make 90 and 90, you have to do all these things. Because we can't fathom any kind of change, let alone when people tell us, like a sponsor, we need to change you completely from the inside out. The person who's here has to go. The person sitting in that chair counting eggs got to die. Because if not, they'll take you back out. We're like, oh, what does that mean? But God will make it happen. God will construct that. God will take away what's in the way. And so I close up with the seven-step prayer because I don't want to go back to where I was. I don't want to be the person who, even if I was to start the work tonight, I don't want to be the same person on the back end of the work again because I've accomplished nothing except gain some knowledge, and knowledge in the wrong hands becomes dangerous. If I was to start the work tonight, I've been through the work so many times, I'm sober a few years, but if I was to sit down with the sponsor tonight and start the work to go through it, everything I've gained up until now is right in the way. I can't go through the work again based on old experiences, old ideas. I need to set it aside. It'll meet me on the back end, but at that moment, my 24 years of sobriety and going through the steps over and over again to start to work again is now in the way of having a new experience. That's how we started, Father. God, please let me lay aside everything I think I know about the Big Book 12 Steps, AA and you, God, for an open mind and new experience. We see new people coming in who try to tell the sponsor what they need to get better, how the steps should be done. You're going too fast, you're going too slow. I think it should look like this. Please don't think. Not my company, right? We have an 8-step list. Comes out of our 4th step. New names will be added to that. We've been made to some degree right size. And now we're about to go out and do God's bidding and repair the wreckage out of my effort to live life on self-will. And here's where healing happens. Just a quick note, we got to close. As I go out to make amends and I start making direct amends, not just approaches, but completing the amends, little by slowly, we'll start to see defects of character die. Most folks, I haven't met any who have completed their amends, have surrendered in one, completed their amends, are really good with 10 and 11 work in sponsoring others who get drunk. Not only not getting drunk, but in the world of the spirit, just lighter about everything. So as we're making amends, we're killing off defects of character. We're showing up for the damage we did. We're accountable. We're responsible. We're doing God's work. And what happens to us, we get spiritual muscles. We get strong spiritually. And we're moved into 10 and 11. And we get to. Everything's a get to. And we're out of time. That's all I got. Thank you.